We are back. College Golf Talk, front and center. Burko and Brentley with you, laying this down on a mid-morning Thursday, fresh off the Stevens Cup at Shore Acres. Let me tell you, a lot of people said it's as good as any place they've ever seen. And after being there, Brentley, I am not going to argue. What an absolute – I'm not an architecture guru. I don't enjoy this course over that course because of who designed it. That's not my MO, but what Seth Rayner did in 1921, phenomenal. And the walk through the clubhouse to the other side. Oh, by the way, there's Lake Michigan. Very, very good place.
Do you feel like Lake Michigan is the best of the Great Lakes, or
go blue? Right.
Well, look, I kind of compare architecture. You said you're not really well versed on the intricacies.
Yeah, like I know. Yeah, but I know who designed things, but I don't say, oh, I'm partial to this guy because he did this, or I don't like this guy because of the perched up greens. I'm trying to hit it, find it, and hit it again.
I always compare it though. Like I'm not a world class chef, but I know what world class food tastes like. You know. It's kind of like that.
So, yeah, well, I mean, said.
You've been around this game long enough. You know what good golf courses are. Oh. That is a great golf course. I was so jealous. You know, schedule didn't permit me flying up there and hanging out with you for a few days. But these, especially on the women's side of college golf, I always say that college golfers play better courses than the pros. And I don't think it's particularly close. When you think about the women have already played Pebble Beach this year. They'll play Meadow Club later this season. You know, they play, you know, on the men's side, Pasatiempo, Old Town Club, Prairie Dunes, the Honors Course this week, Old Barnwell. Like, it's the gamut of
Sahali,
really interesting,
Olympia Fields,
interesting golf courses all over the country. And they're spoiled, as we always say.
And talking to some coaches this week on both sides about schedules, new teams, new faces. Multiple coaches said, we don't chase teams. We don't necessarily chase tournaments. We chase golf courses. They want their players to be put to the test, maybe get their teeth handed to them a little bit to say, all right, this is what it's like. What are you going to do about it? So it met every expectation. A little bit later on, you've caught up with Noah McWilliams, the LSU junior, rather, who led after 36 holes of stroke play. Didn't have the best final round, but a big part of the LSU team victory in Illinois on Wednesday. But let's start with the women. Wake Forest beats Stanford in the final. That's 2-for-2 for the Demon Deacons, winning the Annika, winning the Stevens Cup, a co-medalist in Minnesota with Chloe Kovaleski, Macy Pate, her first collegiate win. They're ahead of schedule, and that's coming from the coaches. They knew things were there. They're mature. They're resilient. They're coachable. The words Kim Llewellyn and Ryan Potter sharing with me, but ahead of where they thought they might be. Yeah, you know, you've got some transfers that have experience. You've got a nice nucleus returning. It's only September 18th. Best team in the country. Really small sample size because that was Stanford's first tournament of the year. They literally just got back to school. There was a lot of downtime after some impressive summers by all of them. And Ann Walker, the head coach of Stanford, she gets it. Big picture. This is September. Not overly worried, but right now, Wake Forest showing they can hang. They can go toe-to-toe.
What was it, the first time in 535 days? I think Cameron Jordan from Golf Week dug up that stat that Stanford had lost a stroke play competition. And Wake's had their number, right? They beat them in the semifinals of the ACC Championship last year. You mentioned the transfers. I when I was deciding where to rank them preseason, it was going to come down to, could Casey Weidenfeld get her game back? And then how would Morgan Ketchum's game translate kind of up a level? And I know Virginia Tech's a Power Four team, but you know, a level below the Wakes and the Oregons and the Stanfords. And it's come together nicely. It's a long season. I don't envision them winning every tournament. I think that would be a monumental task that I don't know that they're capable of. And then at the same time, you mentioned it, Stanford maybe a little rusty. Paula Martin San Pedro got off to an awful start by her standards, was able to battle back a little bit there.
She didn't play well all week. She got it handed to her in match play. Well, let's just call it like it is.
I was trying to be a little bit tempered in in my analysis of her game, but they'll get it back. She's what? Yeah. Still the number two ranked amateur in the correct world. I wouldn't be worried. This might be good for them because last year they won every single stroke play event and they didn't get it done at the end. And this was a really good field. So to take nothing away from Wake Forest, but I still would have Stanford as a pretty considerable national title threat going forward.
Yeah, I spent time with Ann yesterday heading into the match, and I love all the conversations, but her perspective always gets me thinking of our expectations, the expectations of others. And yeah, there are expectations within that team room, but she hit on the fact it's not about how you deal with the expectations. She said her biggest thing she's focusing on, make sure you enjoy it. Have some joy in the game you love. She made some reference to the Nebraska women's volleyball coach, the longtime legend, I believe, John Cook, not our John Cook, and how the new coach went in. Yeah, and you see all these things, and you're like, remember why these kids started playing this game? And she said, I want to make sure they have fun. And we've heard that a lot through the years. I remember when Mary Lou Mulfler, when they won in 2016 at Washington, what did you tell your team? Enjoy it. Have fun. It just struck a chord for me, arguably the best team in the country, the best program over the last 10 to 15 years, that you're always looking for ways to get everybody centered. And not that a team of that caliber needs a lot, but I enjoyed that. And it's just something that's kind of stuck out to me, especially in September, a new season. What are you going to do? How do you go about it? Everyone's back. And she talked about joy. I want to make sure they have a blast while they're trying to do it.
I feel like it's so hard nowadays. It's harder than ever to find that because of all the expectations. These players are getting paid now, so they feel some sort of, whether it's legitimate or not, some obligation to perform for not only them and their teammates, but maybe their sponsors, maybe the school who's giving them some NIL money as well. So the pressure has never been higher being a college athlete, especially in some of these sports when you're on television. So, that's something to remember. That's something to remember in our own fields, you know, to have fun, work really hard, prepare well, but, you know, have fun once the light goes on. And kind of one more thing too from this tournament, I was impressed with the way Kiara Romero battled back, you know, showing up that final round with some back issues to being able to gut out a runner-up finish and just to gut out 18 holes. Kind of shows that she's, maybe a little tougher than some people think. So if I had to give a game ball to someone who didn't make that final match, it would go to Kiara.
Yeah, there were a lot of emotions on that range warming up. And then you start doing some digging. The Northwestern trainer gets involved. You hope it's a one-off that, oh, wow, the back's tighten up, some spasms, some SI joint issues, whatever it is in that lower back. But Kiara, again, seemingly in the mix each and every time out. Some other results for the ladies, the Inverness Intercollegiate, Ohio State rallying on the final day to beat Florida and Princeton. And at Besson, the medalist from South Alabama. So the Lady Buckeyes making an early statement. Gators in the mix. I'd like seeing Princeton playing some bigger events. They're a good team. We're going to see them at St. Andrews in a few weeks.
Catherine Rao. Didn't even play well. She played okay. But, they're good. I remember when we were thinking about the field for this year's St. Andrews event a couple years ago, and I'm like, I tapped Princeton. I'm like, look, we want to get, some of these programs that are very good academically, Princeton's right at the top of the list in both, and they've brought in some great recruiting classes the last couple of years. I'm excited to see how they play. I think they could potentially win here in a few weeks.
Noah McWilliams, LSU junior, coming up in a little bit, spending some time with Brentley as we go from the women to the men. Invitational at the honors course. Nice win by the Ole Miss Rebels. I believe it was a clean sweep, right? Cameron Tankersley winning the medalist honors for head coach Chris Malloy. And that's a five-shot win over Auburn and Virginia. You know, you look at what the Rebels did last year, Michael Esasso winning the NCAAs. They were really close to playing for a national championship. They're a good team, and now they're seemingly there with some staying power. You know, you don't want to say a one and done, but this is a nice early statement of we're not going anywhere.
Yeah, and to see the, you know, some of the players at the back end these first two tournaments, like Finn Meester, Daniel Toff, both have played pretty well in spots. Still not probably quite what Chris Malloy wants from the back end, but that was going to be the big question mark. You know, they had a really good four. Who would step up behind that? To get this win with Michael Esasso not playing well, T23 for him, I think that's going to do good for the confidence. And the Rebs always seem to do this, right? Just when we finally think, all right, like they couldn't possibly prove us wrong yet again, they go out and they do this. But, you know, you mentioned it, you know, Auburn not quite at full strength without Jackson Koivin. But they beat a lot of good teams. And the biggest thing that impresses me too, Berko, is when you look further down this leaderboard at Oklahoma and Virginia and Pepperdine, they all finished kind of mid-pack toward the, you know, middle to top half of this leaderboard, and they did it with most of their best players playing well. The only exception is maybe Oklahoma, Jay Summey didn't have a good week, but they kind of, like, Ole Miss got these teams, at least for September 18th, their best, you know, or closer to their best right now, and they were able to beat that. So I think, you know, Chris Malloy's squad's going to be very confident as they go into the rest of this fall.
Arizona State quietly now 2-for-2 on this new campaign, co-medalist with Wahali, at the Wahali with New Mexico, Utah, BYU, Kansas State rounding out the top five. But it was a scary incident that I don't want to say take center stage, but certainly something I know you want to update people on if they heard some rumblings.
Yeah, it's been a weird beginning to the season for Arizona State. Obviously, they went in Sahali, but that was kind of overshadowed by all those slow play penalties that we saw last week. This week, you know, thankfully, you know, as you said, could have been a lot worse. But there was basically this course is built on the side of a mountain. Like there's these massive cliffs, and it doesn't look like, you know, there should be a golf course there, but it is. It's about maybe 30 miles northeast of Salt Lake City. Really stunning property in terms of the views. I heard the golf course played great. It was really firm and fast, but it's a hard walk, and there's these crazy cart paths with that are super steep, and they basically fall off over cliffs. And they were shuttling spectators from the 16th to 17th hole, and whether the brake went out or the driver lost control or whatever, long story short, the cart ended up veering off the side of a cliff with people on it. Luckily, as several coaches told me, something, whether it was a bush or a tree, kept the cart from falling, you know, a considerably longer distance. So thankfully, no one was killed. There were some injuries. I think the parent of one of the kids broke their ankle. So, you know, we're wishing them all a quick healing process. But yeah, it just kind of goes to show, you know, crazy things can happen, and kind of reminds you sometimes that there's bigger things than golf. But yeah, just a terrible way kind of for this tournament to end, right? You know, I know Garrett Clegg, the head coach at Utah, was pretty gutted because this happened with the lead groups with a couple holes to play. But again, thankfully no one was seriously injured, and yeah, just crazy stuff.
Other results, Canadian Collegiate in Ontario, Notre Dame, Kalen Sanderson, they sweep the titles there. the Highlands Invitational, Wake Forest taking down East Tennessee State University. The Bearcat Invitational, Cincy wins by 11 over Little Rock. Arkansas 3rd, USF 10th, TCU 12th. Not probably what they were looking for in that one as we circle back to the Stevens Cup for the men's side of things. LSU beating North Carolina, takeaways from the week. First and foremost, Texas finished 5th. There was a point on that final day of stroke play Tuesday. They're leading. They made a run. You're thinking, all right, they're playing for a championship. 90 minutes later, Christian Moss doubles 7, doubles 8 as he finishes on the front side. And lo and behold, the Longhorns were headed home. So that struck me at first. But then the LSU-UNC combination, intriguing, because something I mentioned all week on the broadcast, LSU, one of the best teams in the country last year, one seed at regionals. They won 4 times during the season. They don't make it to NCAAs. North Carolina, 15th ranked team in the country, roughly, don't get through regionals. So here was a battle of two pretty darn good programs that were really frustrated by the way May ended. I talked to Jake Amos, the LSU coach, yesterday. Said, how much does that drive you? He's like, we talk about it every day. That cannot happen again. And today's a good day, Championship Wednesday, to get it done. They did. He feels like they're deeper than they were a year ago. And then on the flip side with North Carolina, Andrew DiBattista, you know, for years, we're like, is it North Carolina or Vandy? And there was a little bit of a drop-off last year. And DiBattista raised his hand. He said, that's on me. He said, because maybe I adjusted too much and the standard of what they expect in Chapel Hill slid a little bit. And he's like, that's not going to happen anymore. So it's kind of refreshing and that a coach can say, you know what? We can point there. We can point there. But this is on me. And I think, as he described, this is a team with some grit. We're getting back to figuring it out. They finished 6th at Sahali, but he said we were 10th with 4 holes to go. LSU had the upper hand pretty much all day yesterday, but there was a 30-minute window when all of a sudden those matches, they were 2-3 down, were going to extra holes. And you're like, this is the grit, the fight that DiBattista was talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm still not, I think, at least in my opinion, the jury's still out just on how good North Carolina can be, because you mentioned those teams in the past. They've had guys like Austin Greaser, David Ford, Dylan Minetti.
Yeah.
It's really a
who's it's different.
Kind of who's played college golf these last few years. And but I was encouraged because I think you probably expect Niall Shields-Donegan to ascend and be that guy. Keaton Vo had a great week, but he's been extremely up and down. Like, he's been prone to some huge numbers in his college career. I don't know if he's ready to be that number one guy. He's going to be a fine 2, 3, 4 if he wants to be, but I think Niall's got to be the guy. And it was encouraging because, look, Niall's played a lot of golf. He's played a lot of high-pressure golf with the USAM, the Walker Cup. He's had almost zero time to just unplug, recharge. And so the fact that he was able to, you know, basically not, I shouldn't say not lose a beat, but he still looked like the guy who we saw at Olympic Club, who we saw at Cypress Point. Loves match play. So if you're North Carolina and you get into that final eight at La Costa here in 6 or 7 months, you have to be really confident that you have a guy who can go out even when he's down. He's kind of developed a habit of getting down and coming back late. I would have loved to have seen how far that match yesterday actually ended up going.
They still might be playing.
Of course, at 21st. Yeah, they would have been playing with the car lights on. They would have, you know, still been coming out. But yeah, and keep an eye on Arizona as well. They were just a shot out of making that final match. They didn't have Tony Zhang. Philip Jakubczyk, one of the best players in the country, had a really great summer. So keep an eye on them too. You know, LSU is going to get all the praise, and rightfully so. But Arizona as a team, I think when you look at the stroke play leaderboard, their stock probably, in my mind, improved more than any other team. I knew LSU was going to be good. Jake has been talking up this Dan Hayes kid, freshman from England, for months now to me. probably had an outside shot at the Walker Cup until he didn't finish strong toward the end of July. But they're great. Arnie's, I mean, we know Arnie's a stud. If you get Noah McWilliams rolling like this, a kid who might not have even been on the team if things went a different direction over a year ago when Jake got the job. But you know, to his credit, he followed the lead of Arnie, followed the lead of Al Getclean, who just graduated, paid attention to that low-hanging fruit, and he went out and developed and made himself a better player. And I think that the only thing that's left for him is to get back in that position, because he kind of let it slip away from him in that final round of stroke play. Otherwise, he would have had a huge individual win. He's going to learn. He's going to get better for that. And it's going to be exciting to see what all that talent, all that untapped potential, you know, what could happen when he can finally unleash that.
And we'll catch up with Noah in just a bit. You had a chance to sit down and dig a little deeper with him. Before we do that, one quick thought. Olympia Fields, another big event happening, gosh, what, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I look at the dates. They don't stop, do they? Give me some names. You said, all right, here's some individuals. I mean, this is a stacked field. Arizona State, Illinois, Florida, Texas, Oklahoma State. You know, names that jump out, obviously, Preston Stout, Ethan Fang from Oklahoma State, Tommy Morrison. These are all Walker Cup players, and I think it's something, I don't know if I mentioned last week or not, it's the Walker Cup hangover. I think it's real. I think it's tangible. You know, you even saw it briefly with Niall Shields-Donegan, who played for GB&I. You know, they're going. And then Jackson Koivun did the same. He goes to the PGA Tour. He almost went. These college events are great, but they're still kids, and there's that natural, oh, I just went from Cyprus to carrying my bag for 36 holes. You know, I see it more often than not.
Lunch with former president.
Correct. So those are a couple of individuals that jump out to me. Tyler Weaver, potentially for Florida State. Again, the lineups are now, so we're kind of projecting. We have a pretty good sense.
Here, Berko, I'll give you first pick. Let's just go a quick back and forth snake draft. Just pick five, count the four best scores, and then we'll tally them up and see where we stand next week. But I'll give you first pick because you always seem to win these.
No, I don't. I'm a fraud. Give me Preston Stout.
Okay, I'm going to go Christian Moss with the bounce back.
Darn and, you. That was my second round pick.
And Max Herendeen. Mm-hmm.
A little home game. Cooking.
Yeah. Semi.
All right. Yeah. Then I'm going to go Tommy Morrison. I'm going to say, all right, you know, shook a little rust off at Shore Acres. And I'll take Ethan Fang. I'm going to jump on. I'm telling you, there's a Walker Cup hangover, and I'm jumping right in the deep end with them.
There's a couple more. I think there's at least one more Walker Cupper that you could potentially pick.
I'm looking maybe on the other side of the pond here.
Well, I kind of cheated a little bit and kind of did some digging, but I'm going to go Michael Miyasith and Zach Swanwick from the Florida Gators. Did not have a great week at Sahali. The Gators struggled. I think they have arguably the most to prove in this field after finishing 10th last week. So I think Zach Swanwick helps them get back on the saddle. And, I think the Gators could potentially win this one.
Right. I'm going all Walker Cup. Give me Luke Poulter.
Oh, you didn't even take the one that I thought. So there were three more.
Yeah. And then give me our buddy from Texas Tech,
Connor Graham.
Mm-hmm.
So. It's a good thing this one's not on TV. You'll have to carry the bleep button. and then I'm rounding out my team. I'm going to go really off the beaten path. This is a kid who, when he first got to college a couple years ago, had a bit of a wrist injury. I think it really sapped what he could potentially do right out of the gates. But Aaron Pounds has played nicely for Texas A&M really the last probably 4 or 5 months. And I think this is a year where he could potentially ascend to being a guy who we consider in the same class as some of these players who we've picked. So I'm going to round that with Aaron Pounds, and that's my
all right. Best four out of five, right? We'll see how we fare.
There was one more thing too, Berko, that we didn't go over. I just wanted to shout them out, but Josh Brewer and the Eastern Michigan Eagles, 2-for-2 now. They win the leadership in golf invitational, which might be one of the worst team, you know, one of the worst tournament names, no offense. just very basic, but I know it's probably some name of a company, so I don't want to disparage them, but yeah, just kind of a funny name. But Eastern Michigan, 2-for-2. Janae Laval, one of the twins who transferred from Long Beach State, she's 2-for-2 individually. So it's amazing what money can buy sometimes. Obviously they've gotten some nice donor gifts into that program, but hey, that's what you need this day and age when so much of that money is getting funneled into football and basketball. If you could get a donor who loves golf and loves your program, this is a huge deal. And Eastern Michigan, I don't know that they're piling up the rev share dollars for football and basketball either. So an opportune time for Josh Brewer to maybe build something up there.
There's a buzz in Ypsilanti, Michigan. Just
is that
outside
how you say
of
it? Ypsilanti?
Ypsilanti.
Ypsilanti,
about 6-7 miles outside of Ann Arbor. It's the only reason I know it.
Have you been there?
I've actually stayed in Ypsilanti for a Michigan football game, as my better half misjudged the dates of a hotel, and we were all set the following year, and we realized that when that price was not good for what we were doing. But we'll see how we do next week. It's on record, and I have a feeling you'll get the better of me, but we'll let this play out. Yeah, it's a 50-50, right? Always good to catch up. Time now for your conversation with LSU junior Noah McWilliams.
Fresh off a great performance at one of the best courses in the world, Shore Acres, LSU junior Noah McWilliams. Noah, how about that week? I mean, to be playing at a special place like that, to play, I think, what many would argue, some of your best golf that you've ever played, and to do it on television. I know you haven't had much time to process it, but what were these past few days like?
And these past few days have been amazing. The golf course was immaculate. You know, I didn't see any bad spots on the golf course, you know, and, yeah, you're right. I really haven't had time to process it, but I mean, I was just obviously happy to be there, and you know, being able to play well and pull off a third place finish or whatever feels nice. I know I didn't get the win, but just giving myself a chance to win it on the last day is always a good thing.
Now, they yanked you off the golf course yesterday because the result had already been decided.
Yeah.
How many holes do you think you and Niall Shields-Donegan from North Carolina would have won if they let you keep playing?
I think I would have closed it out on the last hole. And I was in a great spot, and he wasn't in such a great spot off the tee, but you never know. It could have gone another 10 holes. It could have ended right there. Just how it went.
Now, did you know much about him and kind of the match play success that he had at the USAM, at the Walker Cup? And what was that message from coach like on Tuesday night, you know, knowing that you'd go off lead off against someone who's red hot in the head-to-head format?
Yeah, I'd watched the USAM, so I knew his success and all that, and I knew he relied a lot on the crowd, and you know, it meant a lot to me that coach believed in me enough to go out there and get that first point for the team. And I'm just glad, you know, we hung in there. It's a tough battle, but I guess we're never going to know who would have came out victorious.
Was it tough to quickly shake off? I mean, I know it's not often a third place finish individually is disappointing, but it had to have stung a little bit. What was key to you in getting back in the right frame of mind to play match play?
Yeah, it was definitely a little disappointing, but you know, we're here to win the team event, and you know, just thinking about that and knowing my game's still in a really good spot, just trusting what I've been doing right is still good, and going out there on Wednesday and getting that first point was huge.
Now I want to rewind a little bit you know, because there's probably people listening to this who aren't too familiar with you and how you got started in the game. But you're from Benton, Louisiana. What is Benton, Louisiana like? How would you describe it?
I'd say it's a pretty small town in North Louisiana. Pretty country, I guess. You know, grew up in like a, I don't know how to explain it, like a, like more in the, I guess it wasn't necessarily a neighborhood. It's like just kind of house, like out in the middle of nowhere, you know. And, but I did all my golf in Shreveport, so I'd have to make a 40-minute drive every day to practice, you know. And it's not always easy, but you got to do what you got to do.
Mm-hmm. What courses did you play in Shreveport, and whom and where, you know, in terms of course and coach, do you credit for your, you know, upbringing in this sport?
Yeah. So I play at East Ridge Country Club, and I practice at David Toms Academy 265 in Shreveport as well. I'd give good credit all to my dad. He's my coach. He helps me with everything. Anytime I have any issues, I call him. And, you know, yeah, he's basically my coach.
How aware of you, or how aware are you of kind of the legends that have come through the David Toms Academy and Shreveport for that matter? I mean, obviously Sam Burns, a Ryder Cupper, Philip Barbary, yep, who won a U.S. Junior, played in the U.S. Open this year. There's been some heavy hitters that have come through there. How aware were you of that growing up?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I've always looked up to Sam and Philip, you know. I know Philip's not that much older than me, but we play a lot of golf now, and, you know, we practice together and do all that, and just kind of trying to replicate what they do, it means a lot. And, you know, having some conversations with Philip and some with Sam here and there, and, you know, it just really helped me change my game.
Your recruiting process, was it LSU or nothing? Or it kind of take us through what that decision was like, what offers did you seriously consider, and how you ended up down there in Baton Rouge?
Yeah, I had a few other SEC schools offer me, but I've always been an LSU fan since the day I was born, you know. I don't say I bleed purple and gold, but now I do. But growing up, I've watched every football game, every college baseball game. When LSU offered me, it's really hard to pass that up.
How would you describe your first season or so there?
It was tough, you know, getting used to everything. I wasn't playing that good of golf. I don't know. I played in four events, you know, never had a good finish. And just I learned a lot, though, you know, learning from guys like Jay Mendel, who's my age. He obviously had two wins, and, you know, just trying to keep up with him and the other guys on the team. It was a challenge for sure.
What's your first impression of Coach Amos when he got the job? You can be
I didn't know what to think, 'cause I honestly didn't know him. I knew, like, after he'd got the job, a lot of people were saying, oh, he's great. He's done a lot of good things at ETSU. And I was really excited. Obviously, I knew he's an English guy. Didn't know what to think of that at first. But, you know, when I first got to meet him, it was awesome.
Yeah, I would have to admit that Benton, Louisiana, and where Jake's from in England are probably two polar opposites or close to that.
Yep, I'd say what so.
What do you think his first impression of you was?
He had no idea. He's told me a lot of times. He's like, man, I didn't have any rankings or anything. I averaged like a 75 my freshman year over four events, and he had no idea. And I guess the first time he saw me, he was like, man, this guy's pretty good. We just got to get going in the right direction.
Were you worried at all about maybe your future with this program? Because obviously anytime you get a new coach in there, you have these roster limits that were supposed to be coming down the pipe until they allowed coaches to designate student athletes. You have all this stuff, all this noise. Was there any part of you that was a little bit worried that, you know, things might not work out the way that they have?
I mean, sure. I mean, everybody thinks that, but, you know, I trust my game. I know how good I am, and I just know if I keep getting better and better, coach is going to have a hard time not taking me to these events.
What was his message to you? Because as he described it, there was a lot of low-hanging fruit that you weren't grabbing to untap, you know, the insane physical talent you had. What were some of his recommendations, and what were some of the things that you did last season to make sure that those little details, you know, weren't going to be ignored?
Yeah. And he told me a lot, hanging out with the right guys, practicing with the right guys, learning how to practice. You know, he has this saying, he says, do all the things that require no talent, you know, like making your bed in the morning, focus on your diet, focus on your training, do all that. And I feel like I've done a really good job of that. And obviously it's paid out.
I'm going to put you on the spot. Is your bed made right now? You're in your room. Is it made?
No. Not going to lie. It's not made, but
it will be.
I'll get to that at some point in time.
You'll get to it. Diet-wise, how has that evolved? I mean, we've seen players. One comes to mind, Tommy Morrison from Texas, you know, lost 25-30 pounds. Easy to do when you're like 7'5", but it's worked for a lot of guys. Has there been anything that you've learned about the nutrition process of things, and maybe something that you've changed?
I'm a pretty picky eater, so like I don't like a lot of foods that most people like, but it's really like I don't eat that bad. It's just the amount of sodas I drink is pretty, like, it's a lot. And so dialing that down to like one a day, maybe. So I used to be like a 3-day guy, you know, and dialing down to one a day, or maybe not even having any, like, I can see it in my physical appearance. I've lost weight. It's not necessarily a good thing. Kind of need to put on weight, but, you know, just eating the right stuff and focusing on what you're putting in your body is really important.
Not to entice you, but if you had to rank your top three sodas, what would it be?
Mr. Pibb is number one.
Okay.
Dr. Pepper is number two. And then,
aren't they the same?
I mean, yeah, they taste the same, but Mr. Pibb's better than Dr. Pepper, in my opinion. And then probably a Diet Coke.
Okay. Not a Coke Zero guy?
Nah, I can't do Cokes. They don't taste good.
All right. So three a day to one a day. I probably got to get dialed in with that. But so you kind of touched on this. You didn't have a world amateur golf ranking at around this time last year. Where's one area in your actual game, you know, not the things that require no talent, but the things that do, where's one area that's gotten infinitely better than where it was last year?
No, it's not necessarily the physical aspects of golf. It's my mental game. It's gotten a lot better. Like missing it in the right spots on your approach shots, or hitting less than driver when you have to hit less than driver. Like my putting has gotten a lot better too. Just everything has gotten a little bit better since it was last year. And, you know, after, I think it was basically a year ago today, I got my first win, and it just kind of jump-started me to like realize how good I was.
Yeah. And that was the Bayou City Collegiate.
Yeah.
Was that an individual event?
Or? It was an individual event. I didn't qualify for the team to go to, I think, the Blessings when they won. And so I went over there and had a really good week, and I eventually got into the next event.
Is it more satisfying sometimes to be able to perform when, you know, maybe most guys would kind of be upset that they didn't travel to the tournament with the, you know, with the starting squad, and you're stuck playing this event kind of by yourself? But is it more satisfying in a way that you were able to keep the right frame of mind and deliver?
Yeah, for sure. Just knowing that the coach wants us to go over there and win, I guess what we're there to do. I mean, I feel like I'm probably the best player in the field, so I go over there and play good golf and win. It means a lot, and you know, coach wants us, like, that's the whole goal. So it's when you're playing an indie event, to go win it, to get yourself in the lineup for the next week.
Your improvements mentally on the golf course, is there a tournament that you think back of before you figured things out, or you know, before you've started to figure more things out with that, is there a tournament that you kind of point to and go, gosh, like if I just played smart and I had good course management strategy, I probably would have won this or played a lot better. Is there something that pops out?
Not necessarily, because like I said, I didn't play much in my freshman year, so I'd probably have to go back to junior golf to remember any of that. But I know my first event last year as a sophomore was the Knoxville Collegiate, and I had a decent showing. I got like 30th as an individual, and I don't know, I had a good finishing round, so like one under, and I think that might have jump-started it. And then we got to the Valero. I shot my best round in college golf, 65, the last round, and that meant a lot. Showed me that I was actually a really good player when everything's clicking.
And you've shot 64 already twice this year, right?
Yes, sir.
So things are obviously turning around, but I'm looking at your summer results. You had some really good showings.
Yeah.
I believe it was the Monroe, finished fourth there. And then got into some pretty big events. The British Am, you went over there and played. US Am. What did you learn this summer, just in terms of playing some bigger events against higher level competition and having some good and bad as well?
Yeah, I learned a lot. You know, there's a lot of good players out there, and when you don't have your stuff, it's kind of hard to compete. And, you know, at the Monroe, I played well, but I didn't have it. I didn't have my best game, and I still managed to finish fourth or whatever. And that's nice to know that you don't have it and you can still pull off a good finish. But like the USAM, just didn't have it. Poor driving week on a bad week to not hit it straight. And same with the British Am. Not a good driving week on a golf course that requires you to be in the fairway.
Does it take a lot to get you to make, you know, whether it's an equipment change or some sort of swing change or strategy change, does it take a lot for you? Or are you pretty stubborn, like, to stick with what's gotten you here? Or have you been more open to making changes, you know, these last couple of years?
I'm pretty open. I came in the last year, I was an all titleist guy. And then even though I won in the fall last year, I switched to Ping over the winter break. And I'm pretty open. I like to switch putters around. If something's not working, I like to look at something new. And I feel like I might not, I still haven't found what's perfect for me yet. So like, I'm still pretty open. And whether that's Ping, Callaway, Titleist, you can name it. I feel like I'm still looking.
Switching putters, you ever tried the broomstick? Or is that a
no? No, I can't do that. Obviously, I've messed around with it. I've had some teammates who putt with a broomstick. I've tried to hit putts with it. It's not for me. No.
You talked earlier about, you know, looking up to Sam Burns. Have you played with him much? I mean, he still lives, you know, there in Ruston, and imagine not too far away from you when you're home. But have you had a chance to play at all with him? And any things you can share about his impressions of your game? Because he's seen all the good ones.
Yeah, I've never actually played a round of golf with him. I don't really see him as often as I used to when I was in junior golf and stuff. But I mean, I wish I could putt like him. That tells you anything.
Don't we all, right?
Yeah, if I could putt like him, I'd be the best player in the world.
What's been the best part about being on this team now? With the current guys?
Just, you know, learning from all these guys who are from overseas, like Arnie, who's from Iceland. You know, dude's a really good player, and learning what he does. And you had guys like Maddie and Alphonse. Everybody's games are just so different. You kind of get to nitpick each other and figure out what they do best. And obviously we're really good, and it's really competitive down here. And, you know, you have to play some good golf to get on the lineup.
When did you get the nickname Kenny Powers?
That was a Coach Amos thing. That was last year. It was pretty, like, like pretty sudden. Like as soon as he got into town, I was like, man, you look like Kenny Powers. Cause I had, my hair was pretty long, kind of had this similar facial hair, and I didn't know who he was. And I looked him up. I was like, yeah, you're kind of right.
So you're not a big Eastbound and Down guy then?
Oh no, me and my roommate's been watching it for the past couple of weeks. It's awesome. It's such a good show. But I'd never seen it until a couple weeks ago.
He's turned you on to it.
Oh yeah, it's awesome.
So you've embraced that a little bit. I mean, Kenny Powers has some pretty legendary quotes. I mean, about being a true champion, playing real sports, not being the best at exercising. In a way, does personality wise, does he remind you just a little bit of him?
I mean, Kenny's a pretty crazy guy. I wouldn't say I'm on that level, but I can see some similarities. Yeah.
Yeah, you're not trying to be the best at exercising. You're trying to be the best at all.
Yeah, exactly.
Is your biggest flaw your tireless work ethic? Or?
No. No.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good, I'd say.
Awesome. Well, again, this is a big time, you know, school that you're at, LSU. You have the football team, you have the basketball team, the golf team's pretty good. But the big distinction, I think, is that last year, you guys were a number one seed. You didn't make it through regionals. And Coach Amos has talked a lot with us about the fact that he doesn't want you guys to forget that. How much do you think about it, and how much is that fuel for you as you continue to go about, you know, these tournaments this season?
Yeah, I think it definitely sets a fire underneath the whole team. Like, not making it to the national championship last year was really disappointing. You know, we're really good. And, it definitely fueled the fire for us. And we're going to do everything we can to get to the national championship this year and win the regionals and then hopefully win a national championship.
Do you feel like even after this win yesterday, do you feel like you guys are under the radar, over the radar, adequately on the radar? Where do you kind of see yourselves in terms of your motivation?
I feel like we're overlooked. You know, we have Arnie, who's a top 20 player, but other than that, like, we have a few guys in the top 100 that, you know, people don't really think about. And yeah, we're definitely overlooked, and I think that fuels us to want to show people, it's like, hey, we're the best team in the country. You know, we can win every event we play in.
I always like to close these interviews with players just asking them about maybe what they do different, what separates them from other players in college golf. What's one thing, whether it's with your setup, the way you play, the way you prepare, what's one thing that makes you unique or mostly unique from your peers?
I'd say it's my ability to hit the ball. Not necessarily hard. I'd say I hit it pretty hard, but I'm a really good ball striker. So, like, I hit a lot of greens, and when I'm putting well, I can shoot some really good numbers.
Is that God-given, you think? Or?
Yeah, I would think so. I've always was told that, like, the way your ball sounds is different than most other people's.
And it's not anything that you necessarily worked on growing up. No. You just picked up the club. Do you kind of remember, or does your dad share with you the first time that he saw you really hit a golf ball, and about how old?
No, you were? I mean, I was like 4 years old, you know, hitting plastic balls in the backyard and stuff. But no, we really haven't talked about that, to be honest with you.
How many plastic clubs did you break in terms of just hitting them so much?
Who knows? Who knows, man? Unlimited.
What's your hobbies outside of golf?
I fish and hunt.
Much time for that? Yeah, fish.
No, there's no time. Like in the off season and winter break, you know. Obviously, I'm still practicing and grinding at golf, but you know, I like to duck hunt, deer hunt, squirrel hunt. It's kind of too cold to fish for me, but. During the summertime, we like to fish, and, you know, that's kind of what we do. I'm a big hunting, fish, and golf guy.
I haven't heard much about squirrel hunting. I might need you to – I got a squirrel, I think, that's made its way into my attic.
Yeah.
I might need to get you down here to Orlando and get it out for me.
Yeah, I can do that.
All All right. Well, we'll have to set that up. Noah, thanks so much for the time. Great playing, and we look forward to seeing what Kenny Powers can do the rest of the season.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you a lot.